ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, titled Elements of Material Creation, and the texts 58 and 59. Kshipto vamanido sadbhi. Kshipto vamanito sabdhi, pralabdho suyito thava, pralabdho suyito thava, tadita sanniruddho va, tadita sanniruddho va, vrityava parihapitaha, vrityava pariparihapitaha. Kshipto vamanito sadbhi, pralabdho suhito ihava, tadidasa niruddho va, vrityava parihapitaha, kshipto vamanito sadbhi, pralabdho suhito dhava, tadidasa niruddho va, vrityava parihapitaha, kshipto vamanito sadbhi, pralabdho suhito dhava, tadidasa niruddho va, vrityava parihapitaha. Nishtido mutrido vagner bahudhaivam pragampita shreyaskama krichagata atmanatmanam uddharet. This is two verses right there. Kshipitaha, insulted. Avamanita, neglected. Asadhi, by bad men. Pralabdha, ridiculed. Asuritaha, envied. Adhava, or else. Taditaha, chastised. Sanniruddha, tied up. Va, or. Vritya, office means of livelihood. Va, or. Parihapitaha, deprived. Nishtita, spat upon. Mutritaha, polluted with urine. Va, or. Ajna, by foolish men. Bahudha, repeatedly. Evam, thus. Prakampidaha, agitated. Shreya kama, one who desires the highest goal in life. Krichagataha, experiencing difficulty. Atmana, by his intelligence. Atmanam, himself. Uddharet, should save. This is a translation. Even though neglected, insulted, ridiculed, or envied by bad men, or even though repeatedly agitated by being beaten, tied up, or deprived of one's occupation, spat upon or polluted with urine by ignorant people, one who desires the highest goal in life should, in spite of all these difficulties, use his intelligence to keep himself safe on the spiritual platform. This is a purport by servants of Srila Prabhupada. Throughout history, many of the above mentioned inconveniences have been experienced by devotees of the Lord. One who is advanced in God consciousness does not allow himself to become obsessed with the material body even in such conditions, but rather keeps the mind fixed on the spiritual platform through proper intelligence. Om Jnana Timrandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Pishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaham Dadadi Swapadandiram Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vatadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So this verse is very interestingly giving a graphic description of tolerance. How devotees should tolerate different dualities of this world. So if you look into Bhagavad Gita, the first instruction that Krishna gives, it is in the form of chastisement. Krishna says, Ashochyan Anyashochitam Prajnavatam Cha Bhashyate Gadasun Agadasun Cha Nanushochanti Panditaha. So first of all, Arjuna is getting chastised by Krishna. And it is very interesting to know that if somebody is chastising, some devotee is chastising, it is considered good in two ways. One is, okay, generally it is for our purification. Second, it is an indication that that particular devotee has accepted as the servant. So, Krishna actually accepted Arjuna as his servant. So, directly he is chastising. And after that, the next instruction Krishna gives is about the individuality of the soul. So in not even speaking about the soul, Krishna is speaking about the individuality. Natvevaham jatunasam natvam neme janativa na chaivana bhavishyama sarve vayam ataparam. So there was not a time where, you know, these kings were present before. I was there, you were there. So the individuality, and they will be there even afterwards. So the individuality is established. So this point is very important, that the individuality has to be understood. Everyone is individual beings. Why? Because when we accept, or when it is understood that everyone is individual, then free will and responsibility has some role. Without that, there is no point talking about free will or responsibility of individual living beings. As we can see in the 5th chapter, in the 3rd chapter, there is a description about who is the doer, who is actually responsible for the actions. 3rd chapter, 327, so it is said, okay, and all the modes of material nature are doing everything. Same in the 5th chapter, Nadate Gachidut Papam, Nachasuradam Vipu, that is about the Suprabhu, about the Supreme Lord. Vipu never is affected by any of the material activities, and he is never responsible for our activities. On the same token, the previous verse says, okay, even the individual beings are actually, they are not affected, rather the modes of material nature are acting. Sabhavastu pravartate. So in this discussion, we had to very clearly understand that even though the modes of material nature is facilitating our desires as ordained by the Supreme Lord, but ultimately the doer, the responsibility goes to the individual being. So otherwise, what is the whole point Krishna speaking the Bhagavad Gita? What is the whole point of giving whole shastras? If we don't have the responsibility, or if we don't have the free will to change our lives, then what is the whole point of presenting the whole Vedic knowledge? So it is mentioned in Vedanta Sutra that karta shastartavatvat. That is, one is a karta, one is a karta, one is a doer, one is responsible for one's activities. Due to the simple reason that's the reason we have whole shastra present in front of us, so that one can change one's life. Otherwise, it's not possible. It is just like if you ask somebody, many people I have asked, you know, please come for the program. Then people say, no, if Krishna willing, I will come. In the sense, they don't want to come, you know, I'm going home, but you know, when Krishna desires, I will come. Yeah, Krishna is desiring all the time. Krishna is a benefactor of all the devotees, all the time. And he is a benefactor of everyone. So Krishna desires everyone, hears about Krishna, but you know, they say, no, I don't want to, when Krishna desires. Which is not right, because one is responsible for one's activities. So that is actually given in the second verse. The seed of that point is given in the second verse. After Krishna accepts Arjuna as a servant. Then he moves on. Then he says, okay, Dehinosam Yatha Dehe Gomaram Yavananjara Tatha Dehandara Prapta Dhira Tatrana Muhyati. So Krishna says, okay, we are not the body, we are the spirit soul. Then after giving this knowledge, this is the basic knowledge, after giving this, then Krishna says, how to actually come to that platform? Or how to live in this world after knowing this fact. So that is an indication towards today's verse. So Krishna says, Matras Parshastu Kaunteya Shidoshna Samadukhada Agamo Vaino Nityam Tam Titiksha Sabharata. So Krishna makes it very clear. So even though we hear that we are the body, we are not the body, we are the spirit soul. But at the same time, to realize that, one has to live in this world. So and for that, one has to understand, one has to learn to tolerate. Matras prasyastu kamateya, shita ushna. So that is the heat and cold, samadukhada, and the happiness and distress, and other dualities of the material nature. So this is the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. And not only that, the next verse, Krishna says, okay, this is the path of liberation. That is, yamhi na vyathayante de purusham purusha sarva. That is, if one can achieve the quality of sama, dukkha sukham thira, so amritatvaya kalpade. That is, if he can achieve the quality of sama, equality towards sukha and dukkha, then one can go to the platform of amritatvaya, the platform of liberation. So in that sense we can see, okay, this verse is very significant, because this actually gives some indication how to live in this world by tolerating dualities. Now, if we look even our lives, even before becoming Krishna conscious, or if you see, look around what's going on, it's actually a fight against dualities. It's not actually tolerating dualities, but it's a fight against dualities. Say, if somebody has a small house, you know, it's inconvenient. So, I need to have a bigger house. So, go to a bit far suburb, get a house, maybe 4 or 5 bedrooms. It costs a bit, and one has to work whole life. And one can actually own one house when one is about to retire. Or after, you know, at the retirement time, one can actually own one house. Till then, it is belonging to some financial institutions. Actually, and the whole life is actually meant to work for that. So this is, you know, this is because people can't accommodate themselves in a smaller apartment or, you know, smaller accommodation. So one has to pay off the whole life for that. I was hearing one person, he was a businessman, you know, small scale businessman, and he had to work whole life. His whole aim was to buy a particular brand of Lexus car. It was expensive. And the whole life, maybe, you know, couple of decades, he worked for this sake. That is, working so hard to gather enough money to buy a big expensive car. And now the option is, oh, you don't have to do like that. Rather, there is an easier option. Now buy the car and then work for that. So either way, people are trying to create a comfortable situation in the temporary world where there is no comfortable situation, or where there cannot be comfortable situation. And old age, it's an interesting, yesterday we were talking about a documentary about the old age. People want to extend their lifespan. So in the old age, there is one thing, you know, people may be completely, naturally, if they continue their life, they cannot actually continue. Even if they try to continue their life, they can't. Because they have, some people have, you know, problem, the whole body is completely, you know, it's ready to die. But still, it is possible to extend the life due to, you know, different kind of medical treatments. Basically, they will have, you know, 100 tubes, you know, one is going in different directions by the life supporting system, life supporting machines, and they actually extend their lifespan. One person yesterday, we were giving a lecture, so we were mentioning, you know, actually the lifespan has increased. So even if you accept the fact that the lifespan has increased over, you know, past few decades, it means that the suffering has increased, because they have to actually go through further suffering for another decade or two. And suppose if they don't suffer, if there is a, the body is healthy, then it means that the span for sense gratification has increased. It means one is going to get more sinful reactions. So the accumulation, there is a more possibility to accumulate sinful reactions. So the increase in lifespan is very suitable to have a suffering in the future. So in either way, the suffering is guaranteed. Whether it is increased or not. But at the same time, we know that, you know, even the children are killed in the womb. And then if you calculate the life expectancy, the abortion adjusted life expectancy, it is quite low. It's not increasing actually, but rather it's decreasing. Even in the States, at least by 30% it's decreasing. So, in any case, there is that problem in this world. It is like, in any material situation, it's just like a coin. We take any material situation, there is good and bad. It's not possible to have only good. It doesn't exist. There is, for a coin, there is head and tail. In the same way, in any material situation, there is good and bad. Let it be ashram situation, let it be job, let it be service in the conditioned nature. Still, everything has its positive sides and there is negative sides. And one cannot avoid that. This is the one basic principle that is Bhagavad Gita is trying to teach in many, many verses. And we can see in the Uddhava Gita, Uddhava is also taught the same thing, so important. And if we can't tolerate, then we can't actually live. To some degree one has to tolerate the material miseries even to live in this world. Then when we become devotees, actually we have to really learn to tolerate, because that is part in our devotional practice. Because we are association. What does association mean? Association means we are with the devotees. Association, it's not like, you know, ekantam, it's not, you know, it's like not a yogi who is going in the forest and sitting alone. No. Association means we are associating with the devotees. And in the conditioned state, when we are associating with the devotees, it means we have to learn to tolerate. Otherwise, it's not possible to associate. Another Prabhu was once giving a very nice example of a polishing of stones. They put all the stones with the sharp edge in a machine which actually rotates. So all these stones which have rough edge, they are there, you know, hundreds and thousands. And it keeps rotating. And when rotating, what happens? It actually rubs off the edges. And it becomes a nice, smooth, polished stone. So in one sense, devotee association is like that. Especially with the association of conditioned beings, you know, conditioned devotees. Then it is like, we are not perfect. And we have our sharp edges in our behavior. So when we actually associate, actually there will be some friction. There will be some rubbing off. But still, if we continue, if we stick to devotional service, eventually the effect is that we actually become polished. We will develop good qualities. We will develop tolerance. Otherwise, it's not possible. If we can't tolerate that association, if we can't say, oh no, we can't do that, then there is no possibility of advancement. And in service also, because in service we had to deal with so many situations, so many people, still we have to learn to adjust. We have to learn to tolerate so that we can keep going. And ultimately we have to learn to tolerate to give Krishna consciousness to others. Because we may have to go through different difficulties in giving Krishna consciousness to others. Because otherwise it is practically difficult in this age to give Krishna consciousness. It is difficult to preach because people are not interested in Krishna consciousness as such. Even though that is their self-interest, ultimately, still people are unaware of this fact. So people are hesitant to take up Krishna consciousness. We can hear the example of Srila Prabhupada's disciples in Juhu. Giriraj Maharaj and other disciples, when there was fight for the land in Juhu, the Hare Krishna land in Juhu, in Bombay, the devotees had to really go through so many difficulties, because the devotees, they came from the west, and the whole, the accommodation what they had is just a tent, and even the temple was a tent, the Ratha Rajabhari temple, that is just a tent, a small. Now if you see Ratha Rajabhari temple, it's so beautiful. The deities were still there, that was beautiful deities, but the temple is so, it's gorgeous. But previously, when it was established, Srila Prabhupada established, it was just a tent. So it was actually Prabhupada's vision that, okay, I should install the deities even in a tent. Why? Then there is a high possibility that the whole the public sentiments will come in favor of ISKCON. So nobody will be able to demolish the tent and take out the deities. So Prabhupada actually purposefully installed the deities in a tent. And the devotees who were actually struggling for this, they were actually having a very, very, very minimal basic accommodation. And they were coming from the west and they were used to the all comforts of life. And going there and living in such a basic situation, it was a heavy, and it was, the fight was going for months and months and months. And ultimately, it was successful by the guidance of Srila Prabhupada and under the guidance of Giriraj Maharaj. He was completely surrendered to follow what Prabhupada said. Srila Prabhupada made a statement that actually Giriraj Maharaj is not a manager. So he had to manage a lot of things. He said, no, he's not a manager. But he will do what I say. So that was the qualification Maharaj had. So Prabhupada was very happy about that quality. That is, irrespective of what, he was ready to do what his spiritual master said. Irrespective of his managerial skills or not. So in that way, ultimately, the whole situation became successful. Similarly, we can see one story of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, how he was actually taking risk of his own life in preaching Krishna consciousness. It was in the communist country, it was in the communist Europe. So he had to transport books from one country to the other country. And he had a van load of books. And at this checkpoint, they will check everything. And if you find with all these kinds of books, definitely you are in. Maybe your life is finished. So Maharaj actually took the risk. Even in that, you know, very, very unfavorable circumstance, he took the risk of carrying the whole book in the van. And he reached the checkpoint, and obviously the guards, they stopped him and asked, you know, then they were about to ask what is the whole thing. So Maharaj had one thing with him, that was a dog. It's a big dog he had. And Maharaj said, this is my dog, okay, you know, this is my pet, you know, whatever name, okay, I want to go. So the guards, they were completely caught with one thing, with the dog. Because according to the law, you can't carry any living things, any dogs or pets, you can't take it from one country to the next country. That was the law at that time. So they said, no, you can't. So Maharaj said, okay, no, I have to. He perfectly acted as a materialistic person who is attached to the dogs. So he said, no, I have to, this is my life. So they said, no, you can't. Then the argument, you know, went on and on and on and on. And it went to the stage, you know, it's completely from the rules and regulations, you know, usually the guards, they speak on the basis of rules. Okay, this is the rule you have to do. It went above that stage and it became on the stage of false ego. So they said, no, you can't, because I say. So they were completely obsessed with the fact that he's trying to take his dog to this country. So they were completely mental. These gods are completely mental. They were saying, no, you can't, because, you know, because I am saying. So they became completely bewildered, completely by the scene. That point, Maharaj said, finally he said, no, I am surrendered. No, I won't. So when the argument went on such a great degree, and these guards went on to the false ego to the great degree, Maharaj said, no, I won't, then with a, you know, very, you know, very kind of voice, you know, which sounded, you know, he's completely devastated, then the guard said, okay, now you go. So in that, the whole scene, they forgot to check what is there in the van. So Maharaj took all the books to the next country. And, you know, he started distributing books in the communist Europe. So you can see, you know, how the devotees have taken risk in spreading Krishna consciousness. So it is a very live example in front of us. And obviously, this is actually intelligence. This is actually intelligence, preaching, the intelligence, using intelligence in preaching. Yesterday we were talking to a boy, you know, who was coming for the program, and he was describing how Christians were trying to preach to him. It was night, 10:30, near Flinders Street Station. He was coming from work, going home. And, you know, they were telling, you know, immediately, you know, caught him, you know, go by the hand, you know, believe in Jesus straight away. Caught him on Korean team, you know, believe in Jesus, you know, had him, you know, the Bible says Jesus is the supreme, you had to believe, you had to believe. And he said, you know, it's fine, you know, I want to go, you know, I have other scriptures, you know, I don't want to get into it, I want to go, Jesus is a good man, but I want to go. Like that he was trying to, you know, say, and just get off the situation, because 10:30 he wanted to go home. They said, no, you have to believe. Then he said, look, I have to, okay, if you are so insistent, I said, yes, I believe in whatever you say, let me go now. So, these people said, oh, if you believe, okay, come, we can baptize you now, come to the church now. 10:30 is the night, we will baptize you now, come. Two people pulling him. So this is, you know, this is no intelligence whatsoever. How to preach. Once we were in Latrobe and we saw, you know, we were distributing flyers and we saw one person, you know, just the full, he had a big flag, like a big poster on his body from here till bottom. And, oh sinners, you know, blah blah blah, you know, the whole heavy words. And just walking throughout the campus. You know, you will be, you know, who will actually get attracted to such kind of, you know, messages? So this is actually one should use one's intelligence in preaching Krishna consciousness. So even situations can be adverse, but if you don't use our intelligence, we will be unsuccessful, guaranteed, in spreading Krishna consciousness. One has to use one's intelligence. It's very obvious. Now, when we speak about these qualities, this is very exalted qualities. That is, neglected, insulted, ridiculed, or envied by bad men, or repeatedly agitated by being beaten, tied up, deprived of one's occupation, spat upon, polluted with urine. Look, these qualities, this is the epitome of tolerance. And the purport says, there are devotees who actually demonstrated these qualities. So today we will actually look into Bhagavatam, a couple of examples of those devotees who have actually manifested. They are not ordinary devotees, because this needs a very, very, very high amount of Krishna consciousness to come to the platform of tolerating all this. One such an example is one great exalted devotee, that is Jadabharat. Jadabharat, after he got birth, Bharat Maharaj, who was a king, he left the kingdom and he went wandered in the forest as a vanaprastha. Then he got attracted to the deer and he actually fell down from his exalted consciousness to a lower life, that is as a deer. But Krishna's mercy, he had the remembrance as a deer and he was actually going through that lifetime, understanding his bad position. And in the next life, as mercy of the Lord, he got birth as Jadabharat. And Jadabharat, interesting enough, he was completely enlivened, completely liberated personality. He had nothing to do with the material world as such. He was not trying to enjoy, or he was not disgusted with the material world. He was completely aloof. But at that point, when he appeared, he didn't want to get entangled in the material affairs. He was very cautious, because he knew he got entangled completely in the material affairs. Once as a king, then in the vanaprastha life as due to just a deer, insignificant deer. So he was so careful that he wanted to be away from the society. So as a kid, he acted himself as dumb, deaf and blind and as a fool. When his father, and he was born in an exalted Brahmin family, he was effulgent, still he demonstrated himself as a fool. His father will try to teach him something, he will act exactly the opposite. He will say, after evacuation you should, you know, clean your hand. He will clean the hand before evacuation. So whatever his father says, he will actually do the opposite. So to show that he is not interested in the material life as such. He is not interested in the family life. He is not interested in any of these things. And he was following the Brahmacharya, father was trying to teach him the principles of Brahmacharya, the purificatory process of Brahmacharya. He was not so interested. He was trying to perform whatever he could. And it was understood that he was not fit to become a grihastha. It was understood he was not qualified to become a grihastha because he didn't have a proper brahmachari training, or he couldn't follow the principles. So they understood, okay, he can never be a grihastha. So he didn't get married. Then he was going on in his life. At that point his father passed away. And it is very interesting, his characters are described here. It said, Jadabharat, mad, dull, deaf and dumb, they mistreated him, and Jadabharat behaved for them like a madman who was deaf, blind and dull. He did not protest or try to convince them that he was not so. If others wanted him to do something, he acted according to their desires. It's actually a good character as a devotee if we have this character in our devotional service, especially to our senior devotees and spiritual masters, then it is a very good character. Not to act for anybody, but at least to the authorities, if they say what they say, if we can do that, if we develop that quality, it is really nice. But Jatabharata was aloof from everything, so he was ready to act anything, whatever they say. Whatever food he could acquire by begging or by wages, and whatever came of its own accord, be it a small quantity, palatable, stale or tasteless, he would accept and eat. He never ate anything for gratification because he was already liberated from the bodily conception, which induces one to accept palatable or unpalatable food. He was full in the transcendental consciousness of devotional service, and therefore he was unaffected by the dualities arising from the bodily conception. So, this is a very important point as we discussed. Since he was not in the bodily conception of life, so he could tolerate dualities. So, even in our Krishna consciousness, as we actually move ahead in our Krishna consciousness, as we develop taste in Krishna consciousness, then we will be able to tolerate dualities. Unless and until there is a degree to which we can tolerate these dualities. He didn't care for winter or summer, wind or rain, and he never covered his body at any time. He lay on the ground and never smeared oil on his body or took a bath. Because his body was dirty, his spiritual effulgence and knowledge were covered, just as splendor of a valuable gem is covered by dirt. He only wore a dirty loincloth and his sacred thread, which was blackish. Understanding that he was born in a Brahmin family, people would call him a Brahma Bandhu or other names. Being thus insulted and neglected by materialistic people, he wandered here and there. So this was his position. He was completely aloof from the dualities. And interesting enough, actually his stepbrothers actually took the opportunity. They understood he is ready to do whatever they say. So he will just... They engaged him in an occupation. That was to safeguard the paddy fields. In the fields he goes, and if crow or something comes, he has to just say, make some noise. And just wander here and there. That was his occupation. So he is a liberated soul. He has full Krishna consciousness. Understand, he knows whole Bhagavatam. And he has fully realized that. Still he was accepting such a menial service. And he was in such a position. So that his whole point was, then he will not be attracted by the externals. Even we can see Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When he was, before start preaching, he actually took a vow that he would chant 1 billion names of Lord. So at that point he was living in a hut and he didn't want to go. It means practically all the time he was chanting. And when he was living in that hut, if there is rains, because the hut was not so good, in good shape, so the rain, it will be leaking. So Maharaj would actually take an umbrella and just hold it and then keep chanting. So that is his position. And he would eat one time a day, just whatever he could eat, just like eating like a dog, with the mouth, with the hands held like that, with the mouth, whatever he could eat one time, in one breath or something, there is some limited time, whatever he could eat, that was his whole eating for a day. So these are actually manifested by devotees of high caliber. We can't imitate, but it is good to understand. Then we can make sense of this verse, who actually demonstrated this kind of characters. And stepbrothers, they took the advantage and they will give him just broken rice or, worm-eaten grains. So he will accept that as nectar. It is mentioned, he won't accept these things with grudge. If somebody gives something which is tasteless to us, or if somebody offers us off samosa, which is not good, we will become actually angry. And even if we accept, we don't say anything, but in the mind, definitely we will be grudging, we will be thinking, oh, what is this, what nonsense is this, they are not respecting me enough. But Bharat Maharaj, Jatabharata, he was unaffected. So he was thinking, oh, it's a nectar, it's fine, I will accept. He had that. Then, actually, some dacoits came. As the time progressed, he was sitting in the paddy field, and dacoits came, and they wanted an animal to sacrifice. So they found this man-animal, and they took him to perform sacrifice.
They actually put on nice clothes on him, put on tilak on him, bathed him, and did puja for him, arati, incense, everything. And after that, they were about to kill him in front of Bhadrakali. And what Jadabharata is doing? He's doing nothing. He was ready, he's fine. This is the position, and he did nothing. However, Goddess Kali, who was a great devotee of the Lord, she came by herself and he actually killed all these dacoits and started drinking the blood with her associates. So, because she understood he was a great devotee, and they were so envious that they were even ready to kill a pure devotee of the Lord. Still, Jadabharata was completely away from all these things. And at the same time, if you see the instruction to Raghuguna, Jadabharata never tried to insult or never tried to harm any living entities. Because when he was carrying the palanquin with Raghuguna, he was actually walking, you know, he was actually making uneven steps because he was trying to look in the ground to see is there any ants. So we can see, even having all this, he's ready to tolerate everything. And at the same time, he doesn't want to harm anyone, even an ant. This is the qualities actually demonstrated by great devotees. And another example is, just I will briefly read through, that is Rishabhdev, after accepting the avatut form of life. That is actually, you know, whatever characteristic is given, it's exactly the same. It is mentioned, after traveling, after accepting the avatut, he gave up the kingdom. Bharat Maharaj became the king and Rishabhdev started walking out. And he is mentioned, sometimes people threw stones, stool and dust at him. And sometimes people passed foul air before him. Thus people called him many bad names and gave him a great deal of trouble. But he did not care about this, for he understood that the body is simply meant for such an end. He was situated on the spiritual platform. So this is another great soul. That's actually father of Bharat Maharaj. That is Rishabhdev. He demonstrated these qualities. And as a conclusion, we can actually see, we had to learn tolerance in the association of the devotees. That is one option. And the other option is, we had to build a career to fight against the dualities of this world. So that is material life. So these are the only two options we have. Either we had to learn tolerance, or we can actually contract for each and every small things that happens. And then the whole material life is about that. So these are the only two options we have. Hey, is there any questions or comments? I didn't actually see. I should have spoken about Yogananda Goswami. It's a very wonderful example actually. It's actually very nicely fits in Raghunandan Thakur. Raghunandan Thakur was a great devotee, and he demonstrated his devotional caliber even when he was a small kid. So he was the son of his spiritual master was Narahari Sarkar. And even when he was a kid, he had so much of faith in Krishna. So that the Lord himself was forced to appear in front of him to accept the bhoga that he offered. So one time his father went to another place. So Raghunandan was appointed, as a kid was appointed to do the bhoga offering to his deities, to the father's deities. So he went and he sat in front of the deity and he started, you know, chanted the prayers and he offered, you know, please Krishna come and eat. He was not eating. So Raghunandan started, you know, telling, you know, if the father will actually come and chastise me, so, you know, you should eat anyway. Then he started crying. When he started crying and crying, the Lord personally, the deity came out and started eating. And he went out, he told his mother, yes, the Lord has eaten everything. Where is the prasadam? Prasadam, the Lord has eaten everything. Then mother thought, okay, Raghunandan is a very clever child. He is very naughty. Well, we know what he has done inside. So next time, the same thing happened. And one time, his father decided, okay, I will find out what's really going on. So he said, okay, I'm going somewhere else. And he appointed Raghunandan for doing the bhoga offering. And he actually you know, hid himself behind the curtain. And Raghunandan started pleading the Lord. The Lord didn't come. Then he started crying and crying. Then the Lord came. And immediately his father came out. So seeing the father, the Lord went inside the deity. So it's a very wonderful pastime where the Lord directly reciprocated to Raghunandan Das Thakur. And the same case when Raghunandan Das Thakur, so Raghunandan Thakur and his father, when they met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu asked his father, that is Raghunandan's father, who is father and who is son? Who is father and who is son? So Raghunandan's father said, yes, I am son and he is father. So because of his devotional qualification. So that was the position of Raghunandan's Thakur. And there is another pastime briefly I will tell, that is about Raghunandan's Thakur, that is in the festival, in one of the festivals when he was offering his bhog, again prasadam to his spiritual master, that is Narahari Sarkar. Narahari Sarkar personally came and ate. At that time he was disappeared from this world. Narahari Sarkar was not there alive at that point. Still he came personally and he accepted whatever Raghunandan Das Thakur offered. So you know, his devotional qualifications are just amazing. It's just a devotee from the spiritual world. He was not conditioned by the modes of material nature or dualities. So he was beyond. And Vamsidas Babaji. I can't remember much about Vamsidas Babaji. You want to?
Back in Pakistan, Thakur used to bring Ganges water every day from Pakistan. Sarasvati Thakur, the child, used to bring Ganges water every day and serve Bhaktivedanta. But once there was a girl who used to bring, who was just washing or some service, and he yelled and he said, and he grabbed her. And as he moved her, the ball brightened the heat where she was standing. But he used to sit there and people would come and kill him and he'd be covered in like a mountain of flowers.
You want to say something about Vamsidas Babaji? You know, I don't know. Anything else? Any questions or comments? Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Gracias, Srimad Bhagavatam.